Hare Krishna, I welcome all of you to this Bhakti Sangha Japa conference call. We are fortunate to have His Grace Nitya Krishnadas Prabhuji to speak on the topic of glories of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Sri Purushottam Das Thakur. For more lectures on various devotional topics of His Grace Nitya Krishnadas, please visit his Facebook link and YouTube where his lectures are broadcast live. Hare Krishna Prabhuji, are you there on the call?
Hare Krishna Mataji, Dana Pranamas.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. Thank you so much for joining and giving your valuable association. You can take over the call, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Guru Maharaj. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Itam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Paridana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitam Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Vapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavane Sri Sabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vamcha Kalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Vishnu Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschata Deshatarine Aishi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Srivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna everyone. So thank you for this opportunity. I beg the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas, so that we may have a very nice discussion today on this very auspicious day, or day after, the appearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and the disappearance day of Srila Purushottam Das Thakur. So I'd like to just chant the pranam prayers to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the beginning. We'll also read the translation of these prayers, and then we'll carry on.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Iti Namine Sri Varsabhanavi Devi Daita Vipaptaye Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Daine Prabhave Namaha Madhur Javala Premadya Sri Rupa Nuga Bhaktida Sri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostate Namaste Gauravani Shimurti Adina Tarine Rupanuga Viruda Vasidanta Dvanta Harine.
The translation of these four pranam prayers are as follows. I offer my respectful obeisances unto His Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who is very dear to Lord Krishna, having taken shelter of lotus feet. I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Daita Das, another name of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who is favored by Srimati Radharani, who is the ocean of transcendental mercy and the deliverer of the science of Krishna. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, the personified energy of Sri Chaitanya's mercy. who deliver devotional service, which is enriched with conjugal love of Radha and Krishna, coming exactly in the line of revelation of Srila Rupa Goswami. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are the personified teachings of Lord Chaitanya. You are the deliverer of the fallen soul. You do not tolerate any statement which is against the teachings of devotional service enunciated by Srila Rupa Goswami. So these are the four pranam prayers that are offered in glorification of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And it's nice for us to also read the translations of these verses. Sometimes we read the verses, but at least speaking for myself, don't fully appreciate the purport of these verses. And as we can see, some very nice offerings are made here. So to glorify a great personality is explained in our Shastra that glorifying Grantha Bhagwat, the book Bhagwat, and glorifying the person Bhagwat are equally beneficial for us. By hearing about these great acharyas, these great personalities, we can draw great inspiration to follow in their footsteps. It is said that by speaking and by hearing about the glories of great personalities, one cleanses the heart of all the impurities that remain as impediments on the path of devotional service. And so by having this opportunity, we hope we can cleanse the heart and make some progress in our process of devotional service by learning and hearing and pulling into our heart the great teachings of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. We know following in the footsteps of our previous acharyas is one of the critical processes to enhance our progress in devotional service. And so we'll try to hear and learn a little bit about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur today. So discussing the glories of Om Vishnupad Shri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur are especially pleasing for us as followers of Srila Prabhupada. It is like speaking about our great grandfather or grandfather from a spiritual term, coming in the line of this great Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. And so we can understand by studying Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's activities and teachings why Srila Prabhupada did so many of the things he did. And when we study Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we then find great clarity why Srila Prabhupada emphasized so much about books, because that was the teaching of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Why Srila Prabhupada so early on, relatively speaking, in his mission, established the GBC, because that was the vision of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Why Srila Prabhupada was so fond of presenting this philosophy in dioramas and exhibits, because that was the desire of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to find innovative ways to capture audiences. Now, why Srila Prabhupada was so adamant to venture to the West, even though he was rejected initially? Because that was the desire of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And the list goes on. And we'll see how Srila Prabhupada perfectly exemplified the mood of a disciple by following the instructions long after the physical association had separated, but staying in association through Vani. And so there's a great instruction for us. So we can see how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur inspired Srila Prabhupada to create the home that we are all living in now. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he altered the course of modern religious history. He revived and very forcibly propagated the original teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Many of the prior acharyas, prior to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they left great literatures. But it was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that began to distribute this knowledge to the masses. He was the first who left the holy dhams and went out into the major metropolitan centers of India at that time. And those who were immersed in material entanglement, in the miseries of material life, it was to them that he, with great love and compassion and in great vigor, delivered this message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, when we think of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, many adjectives or describing characteristics come to mind. You know, he was a prodigy. He was very bold, extraordinary scholar, humble, austere, very innovative, and most importantly, extraordinary love and compassion. And it is rare to find this and just a small glimpse of his qualities all within one person. Someone who can be innovative and bold, a scholar, yet very loving and compassionate, having from very early childhood and mastered things. This is the, you know, the greatness of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was known as the Lion Guru, the Simha Guru, because he was fearless and very ferocious in preaching. He was ferocious against the influence of Maya on the conditioned soul. He was very ferocious against all the bogus philosophers who were misleading the innocent public. But he was also very tender and loving to the innocent fallen soul. And so like a lion, ferocious, yet very tender and loving, this was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Over 62 years, the span of 62 years of his presence on this world, he set the foundation for which Srila Prabhupada then built the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, this home that we are all living in today, the home that the whole world can find comfort and safety. It was built on the foundation set by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He again established this pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and spread all throughout India, establishing ultimately 64 Gaudiya Math and leaving one very, very important instruction in his waning days on this planet. He reiterated a very important instruction to our beloved Srila Prabhupada. And that instruction carried on his entire mission for the next 40 or 50 years of his presence here, and thus we are all the beneficiaries of that. So this is what we'll discuss today, the great story of this great Simha Guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So in order to understand Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's activities, we have to rewind the clock a little bit. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, we all know he came for the mission to inundate the world with pure love of God, this Krishna Prema. And he gave it to everyone and anyone. He set aside all social designations. Everyone was qualified to chant the holy names of the Lord, to awaken this dormant love of God. And he said that everyone should become expert in this science and become a guru and spread this knowledge far and wide. And he made the bold prediction that in every town and village, the names of Krishna would be chanted. And he didn't say every town and village of Bengal or West Bengal or India. He said of the world. And so that was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission and activities some 500 years ago. But after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, his movement carried on for some time. But about 200 or so years later, the pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were virtually lost. His teachings, the whole holy Dham of Navadvip, all but had disappeared. And many bogus philosophers arose and they began to adapt the teachings for personal objective. And they were breaking the dharmic principles, going in diametrically opposed to what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taught. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided that he had to send one of his eternal associates to Goloka Vrindavan, one of his manjaris. And he sent Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the mid-1800s to begin to unlock the grip
of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pure message from these bogus philosophers. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur came, and as we know, he was a very exemplary grihastha. He had a great, you know, job, but he was he's considered our seventh Goswami because he wrote prolifically about the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He uncovered, you know, a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita, and that became his greatest treasure. And he reestablished all the principles of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pure teachings. But in his position, he was feeling limited to be able to then take this message to the masses, to be able to preach and broadcast this message. And he was lamenting that how this knowledge that he was presenting and preparing would now become distributed. And so he prayed very intensely. He prayed very intensely to Lord Jagannath to send him a son who could take on and carry on this message. And on the fifth day of the dark lunar fortnight in the month of Magh, in our Western calendar, February 6, 1874, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his wife, Shyukta Bhagwati Devi, gave birth to their fourth son in Jagannath Puri. Seeing the answers of Lord Jagannath being, his prayers being answered, he named the child Bimala Prasad, seeing it as Prasad of Lord Jagannath. Those of you who have gone to Jagannath Puri may have taken darshan of Vimala Devi. She has a wonderful altar just behind Lord Jagannath's altar. And she has been given the benediction that all of the Mahaprasad, all the bhoga that is offered to Lord Jagannath, after it is offered, all of the maha first is then offered to Vimala Devi. And from Vimala Devi, it then goes out to the masses. And there's a whole pastime around that. We won't go into that to keep on track with the story. But for this reason, Bhaktivinoda Thakur named his son Bimala Prasad, who would later become known Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And when he appeared in this world, he appeared with extraordinarily auspicious signs, indicating that a great personality had come. When he was born, his umbilical cord was wrapped around his body exactly like a Brahmin thread. And when the astrologer came to perform his horoscope, to read his horoscope, he was struck. He said, "I have performed so many horoscopes in my life, but never have I seen such a horoscope filled with extraordinary signs of this great personality." He said he had all the signs of the 32 bodily symptoms of a Mahapurusha. You know, long arms, broad chest, broad shoulders, broad forehead. These signs that are given in Shastra, this Bimala Prasad was carrying. And he said and predicted that this boy will preach the highest truth in life. And so from a very early age, it was established that this was some great personality. That same year of his appearance, again, he was appeared in February 6th, and so around the month of age 5 months old, the Lord Jagannath's Rath Yatra festival was taking place. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a great magistrate, he had a home right on the main road. And so his mother, Bimala Prasad's mother, again, Shyukta Bhagwati Devi, had brought Bimala Prasad out to the balcony to see and take darshan of Lord Balaram, Mother Subhadra, and Lord Jagannath. And as Lord Jagannath's cart passed just in front of their house, it stopped. And his cart would not move. And this, we know, happens in Chaitanya Charitamrita. We see the great interaction between Lord Jagannath and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the cart stopping and starting. So like this, the cart stopped. The devotees were trying to pull, but it would not move. For 3 days, the rath stopped right in front of their house. And so Bimala Prasad's mother saw this as a great opportunity to obtain the blessings of Lord Jagannath for her newborn son. And so she went down into the street, made her way through the crowd, and reached the cart of Lord Jagannath. She climbed the cart, and placed Vimala Prasad right at the feet of Lord Jagannath. And as soon as he was placed at the feet, Vimala Prasad reached for the feet of Lord Jagannath. And as soon as he reached for the feet, the garland Lord Jagannath was wearing fell from the deity and encircled this five-month-old child. The pandas on the cart were in complete ecstasy, seeing this very sweet exchange between Lord Jagannath and his dear devotee. They began to chant, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. They had no idea who this was, but they understood somebody extraordinary seeing this wonderful exchange. They performed his grain ceremony right there on the cart. His first grains was Lord Jagannath Maharaj. And so when Bhaktivinoda Thakur heard about this, it was then conclusive in his heart and mind that his prayer to Lord Jagannath was surely answered, and he understood that this boy would go on to do great things and carry on this message that of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. From a very early age, we saw and we see great discipline of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When he was barely 3 years old, his father had brought home some mangoes. And as an innocent boy, seeing something very nice, very ripe, sweetened mangoes, he thought, oh, I would like to eat. And he expressed as such to his father. And his father very mildly corrected him, saying, you know, we should not desire to eat until after they are offered to the Lord. So let us offer to the Lord. And like this, Bhaktivinoda Thakur corrected his son. But Vimala Prasad took that as a great offense. He said, I have this desire to eat before the Lord. He's just a three-year-old child. Yet he had such consciousness that he felt very bad. For the rest of his life, he would not honor mangoes. Srila Prabhupada comments that whenever he was offered mangoes, even in a chutney or in a cooked prep, he would not take. And he would just say, no, I am an offender and cannot take it. For a quite innocent mistake, he was very disciplined. And we see, and we can take some instruction from this, the importance of discipline in spiritual life. You know, how we can find ways to regulate, you know, our activities. Again, it is some of free will. Nobody told Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur he should not eat mangoes. It came from within. And this type of discipline we can try to draw some instructions on. As he began to become a young boy, age 5, 6, 7, his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, would give, you know, great classes in his home, and all the devotees would come, and he would speak on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and the great literatures of our, you know, six Goswamis. And Vimala Prasad would sit with rapt attention in these classes. He would be completely absorbed in hearing, not fidgeting, you know, as we see sometimes when we come into classes, not only ourselves, but young children. It's difficult to be attentive. But Vimala Prasad, at a very young age, was fully absorbed in these classes. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's guests were always amazed to see this of this child. You know, by age 7, we all know that he had memorized all 700 verses of Bhagavad Gita. But the memorization of the verses was not as impressive as his ability to discuss and explain the verses, explain the meanings of the verses, and explain and use those verses in preaching. By age 7, he had fully understood the Bhagavad Gita. And his brilliant scholarship continued through his school studies. He would only read the books of his father and Narottam Das Thakur, Prachana Prema Bhakti Chandrika. He would never read any of the class books, yet he would score the highest marks in all the exams. He always finished first in his class. He was so brilliant. He had a eidetic memory, like a photographic memory. If he saw something or heard something or read something once, he had it committed to memory. His tutors at this time, this is a very young age, they gave him the name Siddhanta Saraswati, noting his great scholarship.
This was during his kind of childhood, youthhood days of schooling. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur established his printing press in 1885, Bhaktisiddhanta at that time was about 11 years old. He began to edit Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books at just age 11. He had such mastery of Sanskrit and of Bengali and of English that he was editing Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books. And his scholarship continued. He received a full tuition scholarship to Sanskrit College in Calcutta. And he attended. He was very brilliant in mathematics and astrology, philosophy. And again, he would not read any of the course books. He had read every book on philosophy and religion in the library. But whether he read or not any of his course books, he still always scored highest in the class, first marks. He learned Sanskrit grammar extraordinarily quickly. The professors and faculty, they were really encouraging him to make a life of studying grammar. And he refused, saying, what is the point of studying grammar? The point is to understand the real teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to bring about this love of God. Just scholarly studyship of grammar has no value. But he was extraordinary. He was a great astrologer, and once he engaged in a debate, much like Nimai Pandit did with Keshav Kashmiri, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur engaged in a debate in college. And there was a great scholar by the name of Panchanana Sahityachara. And this great scholar was also a great astrologer. And so they established a debate in the home of one of their professors, and the professor was going to judge. And the debate ensued, and Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur very swiftly, shockingly swiftly, defeated this great scholar, Panchanana Sahityachara. And it was explained that this scholar was so mortified by how he had been beaten that right there in the debate, he lost control of the call of nature and was just completely mortified. After this point, nobody was ready to debate Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, fearful of what may ensue. He was even given a professorship position in the university, though he never graduated. He writes in his autobiography that he did not want to graduate from college, though of course he had all the marks ready to graduate. He left because he knew that if he graduated from college with such a high mark, there would be a lot of pressure for him to get married and enter grihastha life. But he wanted to remain in this brahmacharya ashram. And so he thought, if I drop out, nobody will be so anxious and eager to marry a dropout. And so he left college. Even though he left, he was still offered a faculty chair position in college to teach Sanskrit. So after leaving the Sanskrit college, he spent some time working for a couple of kings in Tripura. He was doing some editing and teaching and whatnot. But his main focus was, again, continuing to study the great literatures and supporting the preaching mission of his father. When Jagannath Das Babaji, the spiritual master of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he came to Navadvip, he noted Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's great expertise in astrology. And he asked Bhaktisiddhanta to prepare this Vaishnava calendar. This Vaishnava calendar that we follow today, it was established and created by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he asked him to note down all of the important appearance days, disappearance days, various festivals that we should celebrate. It was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who, by the instruction of Jagannath Das Babaji, established that we now actually follow today. So we're very grateful that he has marked all these very important days for us. In 1898, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji came to Navadvip. He was staying in Vrindavan for several decades. He was a bhajanandi. He would stay, in a very secluded, remote area and just be deeply into his
meditation and chanting of the holy names. But he wanted to come to Navadvip because there recently was the installation of the Gaura Vishnupriya deities at Yogapith. These deities are still there, if any of you have been. It's very, very beautiful deities. And so Gaura Kishore Das Babaji came to Navadvip to have darshan of these deities and have darshan of the holy Dham of Navadvip. And there he engaged with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He would attend classes by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and had great sangha with him. And they would enjoy each other's discussions on various philosophies. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, seeing the great situation of Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, inspired his son, Bimala Prasad, to seek initiation from Gaura Kishore Das Babaji. When Bhakti Siddhanta Sotera first met Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, there was an immediate connection. There was a great bond. Gaura Kishore Das Babaji had very little possessions. He came with one tiger skin cap and a basket with some articles. But he was so fond of Bimala Prasad that he offered his cap to Bimala Prasad. This cap was given to him by his own spiritual master, Bhagwat Das Babaji. A very dear possession of Gaura Kishore Das Babaji he gave to Bimala Prasad. It was such a nice connection. He gave also a few other articles to him. But in 1900, in early 1900, you know, about 2 years after Gaura Kishore Das Babaji had come, again at this point Bimala Prasad was 26 years old, he approached him for initiation. And at that point, Gaura Kishore Das Babaji had no initiate disciple, and he had no intention of becoming a guru. And so when he was approached by Bimala Prasad, he rejected him. He said, no, I cannot give you. Actually, out of humility, he was saying, I am illiterate. You are a scholar. At this point, Bimala Prasad was known throughout the area as an extraordinary scholar. He said, I cannot give you initiation. But Bimala Prasad understood the great importance of diksha, of taking initiation. No matter what scholarship we may have, what knowledge and ability we may have, without the mercy of Guru, we have no hope in reaching Krishna. So he was very determined, very, very determined. But Gaura Kishore Das Babaji refused, flatly refused. And Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur kept pressing. And finally, Gaura Kishore Das Babaji said, okay, I'll ask Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If he says yes, then I'll do it. So Bhakti Siddhanta was pleased, said, okay. So after some time, he approached and said, did you speak to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Yes, I spoke to him. What did he say? Oh, I forgot to ask. Oh. And so Bhakti Siddhanta said, okay, no problem. Can you ask next time you speak? And Gaura Kishore Das Babaji said, sure, I'll ask next time I speak. After some time, he approached again and asked Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, did you speak to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Yes, I spoke to him. Oh, what did he say? He said, I don't have to give initiation to you. And that was like a thunderbolt to the heart of Bhaktisiddhanta Sosa Thakur. And he said, if I am so fallen that I cannot have the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Patita Pavana, and I am so fallen that I cannot have the mercy of the great Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, then I have no purpose to live. It better I end my life now by jumping into the Ganges. And seeing this great determination and humility, Gaura Kishore Das Babaji then gave initiation. He said, you take bath and come back. And Bimala Prasad took bath, came back, and Gaura Kishore Das Babaji gave him initiation, and he initiated him with the name Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Dayita Das, which means the lover of Srimati Radharani, the servant of that lover of Srimati Radharani. That lover, of course, being Krishna. So Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Dayita Das was his initiated name by Gaura Kishore Das Babaji in January of 1900. And we see this pastime of his initiation, very similar to the activity of Narottam Das Thakur approaching Lokanath Swami. So in 1905, approximately 5 years after initiation, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur wanted to perform a great austerity to prepare for his preaching mission. And so he took a vow to chant 1 billion names of Krishna. And he decided to do it in the mood of following in the footsteps of Srila Haridas Thakur, that he would chant 300,000 names of Krishna each day. This is 192 rounds. And he did so with great austerity. He cleared a small area at Yogapit. This Yogapit was basically a jungle. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had recently identified this as the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so there was undeveloped. It was basically a jungle. And so he cleared a small area. And there, over the next 9 years and 4 months, almost 10 years, he was chanting 300,000 names of the Lord every day. After actually about 4 years, he moved to a nearby place in the Chandrasekhar Bhavan. But in that same vicinity, here he continued. He would sleep only on the floor, no bedding, no pillow, nothing, in a very austere way. He would eat in an extraordinary way. He would just cook a small amount of rice, and he would put it on the floor on a piece of stone. And then he would hold his hands behind his back. He would be seated. And then he would bend down. And whatever he could eat in one kind of breath, in one bending, he would eat. And then the next day, he would take again. And like this, he carried on for one decade. Very strong austerity. When it would rain, maybe we have seen this picture of Bhaktisiddhanta Sattva chanting in one hand and the other hand holding an umbrella. Because when the roof caved in from his hut, water would come in and he would still continue on. It was during this time that he also completed his commentary on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which became the basis for Srila Prabhupada's presentation of Chaitanya Charitamrita to all of us. He also met many, many nice devotees during this time. And his Gurudev, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, was very pleased. And out of great humility, he said that, you know, I observed the renunciation of Sri Rupa Raghunath is manifest in my Prabhu. He used to call Bimala Prasad, his disciple, my Prabhu. And he was noting his great mood of renunciation. Srila Prabhupada comments also that he said he underwent very severe penances for starting this movement, the worldwide movement. That was his mission. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur performed extraordinary feats. You know, and when we speak about this, you know, we speak about his memorization of these verses, his expert knowledge in Sanskrit, astrology, this severe austerity. We have to also put in context that this happened in very recent history. You know, at the time that, you know, automobiles were driving on the road and planes were starting to fly in the sky, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was performing these great feats. Sometimes when we hear of these great feats, it takes us back to, you know, prior eras where, you know, things happened. But this was happening in very recent history. And so we can understand the extraordinary position of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. One very famous activity was this Baligai showdown. As I mentioned, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was fighting very ferociously as well to reset the original teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the main aspect of disconnect was the claim by the Smartha Brahmanas, the caste Brahmanas, that this philosophy and this practice of bhakti was the exclusive right of the Brahmanas. And that goes in direct contradiction to the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who established that the Vaishnavas were superior to Brahmanas, that one who is a servant of Krishna is the highest of all positions. And such person who has mastered the practice of bhakti is empowered to spread the teachings. And so the Brahmanas, their monopoly was being threatened because they had established themselves as the only one who could propagate this knowledge, and it was good for business. Because their business was not to teach us how to stop sinning, their business was to perform some, you know, different prayaschitta sacrifices to atone for such sin, receive some remuneration for such yajna, and then see us back again the next week when we carried on with our sinful life. But the real preaching was to stop this process of sinning. And that is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur was beginning to propagate. And so this debate about Vaishnavas versus Brahmanas was a very hot topic in this time. And so the Vaishnavas had asked Bhaktivinoda Thakur to represent the Vaishnavas, and the Brahmanas had picked their representative. And there was going to be a great debate to once and for all settle this topic. And so this was a very important step for all of the Vaishnavas. And just weeks before this debate, Bhaktivinoda Thakur became very sick with rheumatism. He was in bed with a high fever. And it became evident that he was not going to be able to attend this debate and present the side of the Vaishnavas. And he began to call out who can come and who can go and speak. And they were all concerned. And so at this point, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur authored a very detailed and elaborate paper. He wrote an extraordinary piece, pulling from all different references of Shastra, how the position of a Vaishnava is superior to that of a Brahmana, and what the mission of a Vaishnava is. And this paper very much impressed Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he said, now someone has come who can adequately present this position and assure success. And at this point, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta was very, very young. You know, he was, in relative terms of that age, he was 37 years old at the time of this debate. And so, in order to be taken seriously, he had to be extraordinarily precise and clear with his presentation. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was convinced. And this three-day debate took place, and as usual, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur smashed to pieces all of the presentation from the Smarta Brahmana. And very clearly and exuberantly established the position of Vaishnavas. And the commentary presented on this debate is so sweet that at the end of the debate, there was such a adoration for Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. People were wanting to have his blessings that there was a mass rush to the stage, and the police were very worried that a riot was going to ensue, and a very dangerous condition was developing. And so one very smart police officer, he brought a bucket of water, forcibly dunked the feet of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur into that bucket of water, and then they began to sprinkle that water on the heads of all those who were rushing the stage as a way of passing the blessings and quickly pacified the crowd. And, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur became, you know, his reputation and position began to grow very, very strongly. So when Gaurakishore Das Babaji, you know, left this world in 1915, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur had also left, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was feeling very deep separation, and he was very saddened, and he was wondering who was going to instruct him, who was going to correct his writings, who was going to tell him what to do. You can see, though he had achieved so many things, he was so humble. And so he was left thinking, how I will carry on. And so in a dream came the Panchatattva, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda, all Panchatattva, the six Goswamis, Gaurkishore Das Babaji, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and they all spoke to him. And they said, my dear Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, you please go out and preach and know that we will be with you. We are always with you. And that dream, that vision, that experience emboldened Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to begin this revolution that we are all the beneficiary of. So the next day, he became very enthused, very effulgent. And in 1918, he then took sannyas. He took sannyas at the age of 44 because Gaurkishore Das Babaji did not have any disciples. He took sannyas in front of his picture. And then he entered the realm of Calcutta. Gaurkishore Das Babaji had always warned to Bhaktisiddhanta, don't go to Calcutta. You will become trapped in the material allurements. It is so strong. And Bhaktisiddhanta used to laugh and said, ha, it will never happen. But he wasn't confident because of his own ability. He said, it will not happen because I will enter Calcutta carrying your feet on my head. And with the blessings of your lotus feet, this message can be spread. And so on the mercy of Guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur began his mission in Calcutta. He established the first preaching center at 1 Ulfadungi Junction Road in Calcutta. This was the first Gaudiya Math established. And on the rooftop there, he would give lectures each evening. And it was on this rooftop that Srila Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. We'll come back to that maybe at the end if time permits. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually comments also that the first time he touched the feet of Gaurkishore Das Babaji and he put the feet to his head, his whole body was overwhelmed with an energy, a spiritual energy, like nothing he had ever experienced before in his life. And that was one of his most cherished moments of his life, is the first time he put the feet of Gaurkishore Das Babaji to his head. And he writes about this very sweetly in his books. So, immediately upon entering Calcutta, he began to print books. He established a printing press. He became so expert, he did not want to rely on anybody, that he had figured out and learned also how to work the press, how to repair it when it became broken. These are very complicated pieces of machinery that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also had a very great mechanical mind and mastered the printing press. He considered the books to be the Brihad Murdanga. He said a Murdanga could be heard for 3 or 4 blocks, but the books, the message could be carried across oceans. And as we know, he was laying the seed for the oceans that Srila Prabhupada would cross to come and save all of humanity and to carry out the proclamation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So from the next 10 or so years, the mission, the Gaudiya Math, expanded very rapidly. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was traveling all over India to all of the major cities, establishing these Gaudiya Math temples. He would give 3 to 4 lectures a day, often each several hours. His classes were so powerful, so capturing, that he could speak for several hours without losing the attention of his audience. And he was constantly propagating the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And people were becoming very attracted. They were becoming very enthused, and he was developing many, many followers, thousands of disciples he had initiated, again, built, established 64 very beautiful temples, and was printing books. He had been writing his periodical, and like this, he was carrying on his preaching mission. But his mission also was facing some opposition. The Smartha Brahmanas were very threatened. Siddhanta Thakur was giving initiation, was giving Brahmin initiation to non-Brahmanas. it was actually Bhaktisiddhanta Sitakur who first gave this, you know, Brahmin thread in the current process that we follow in our ISKCON movement to second initiates. That was initiated or instigated by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. And so this presented a great threat to the Smartha Brahmanas. And so they went as far as to even try to take his life. Twice they tried to kill Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. On Navadvip Mandal Parikrama, they had bribed a police officer, Srila Prabhupada tells this story, 25,000 rupees they had given. And their police officer says, yes, it is our job description to take bribes, but we cannot do so in this instance. And they had informed Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur of this plot, and he had escaped. Another time, when they were in the town of Navadvip, some dacoits, or we can say gundas, had come, and they were throwing bricks and trash from the rooftops, trying to attack Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur and all of his disciples, and he very narrowly escaped by the wisdom of one of his disciples. You know, we won't go into all the details, but like this, twice his life was threatened, but he remained steadfast. He was fearless. He was fully dependent on the mercy of his father, his spiritual master, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so regardless of what would come, he was very, very fearless. And if we see the activities of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, we see many, many teachings. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was very, very humble. Though he was ferocious with humility. Prabhupada speaks of any time he would offer obeisances to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta would reply, Dasa Asmi, meaning, I am your servant. This was the mood of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. When he gave initiation, he wrote in his commentary that the guru, when a guru thinks he's guru, he is not guru. He says that the first you in guru becomes an A if one thinks they are guru, and they become garu, a cow. He was very careful. In his first Vyas Puja address, he addressed all of his disciples as my friends, rescuers from danger. He said a guru must not think they are guru. But if a Vaishnava does not do the work of a guru, then the Vaishnava lineage will stop. So this simultaneously, one must be guru, but one must never think they are guru. And this was the mood of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. He says a real guru does not make disciples, and thus remains a guru. And this was the strong warning Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur gave on this concept of thinking, you know, this overlording, thinking I am the master of someone. As soon as guru thinks they are the master of someone, it becomes a very dangerous position. And so Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur carried this very, again, ferocious, confident, strong attitude, but very humble. He never saw himself as the guru, though he was acting as the most wonderful guru to Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada carried on this same mood when he gave the disappearance address in Los Angeles very, you know, emotionally. He called out to all of his disciples and he said, I have to thank you very much because you are helping me serve my Guru Maharaj. And he considered him the servant of his own disciples. So this mood we see in Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur also, you know, lived this Yukta Vairagya principle. He was the perfection of Yukta Vairagya. Anashaktasya Visharam Yathagam Upayadandayate Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yukta Vairagya Uchyate. This real renunciation, what is it? It is not just to renounce the material world. It is to renounce the material world for the purpose of sense gratification. But to use all the facilities of the material world in the service of Krishna. Falgu Vairagya means to reject something that can be used for Krishna on the basis of it being material. That is actually false renunciation. So real renunciation is to actually use, one must use the facilities of the material world to serve Krishna. And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur lived this to the fullest. We know, we just discussed how austere Bhaktisiddhanta was, living in a thatched hut on the floor, no bedding, eating in an extraordinary austere way, sitting under an umbrella when the rains would come, for 10 years immersed in the chanting of the holy name. Such austerity, none of us can even try to replicate for a few hours. Yet when it came to preaching in the big city centers, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur did what it took to reach the masses. He would meet with very high class people with the understanding that if they were convinced, then those who were following them would also be convinced. And so he would try to preach to great, you know, industrialists, big capitalists, different government officials. And to do so, he would wear fancy coats, fancy hats, nice kurtas, whatever it took. And for a sannyasi, particularly in this time, to wear anything that was stitched, it was out of question. He was criticized severely for this. And how you can call yourself a sannyasi and wear stitched clothing, things like this. But Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur didn't care what anybody thought. He understood that in order to preach to these folks, he would need to do these sorts of things. But while he was doing them, he was very careful. And he would warn his followers, do not become attached to this opulence. He preferred a life of simplicity, of austerity. That was actually comfortable to him. But he sacrificed those comforts for these things. He would travel in motor vehicles. Again, unheard of for sannyasis in this era. But his philosophy was simple. By traveling in motor vehicles, in one city I can give 3 lectures and cover great territory to try to convince the conditioned souls to come to their process of bhakti. And so for that he was willing to even travel in motor vehicles. He established very opulent temples. He first-class marble. The programs, he would instruct his disciples, the program should be very first-class. Nice decorations should be made. Everything should be very clean. Prasadam should be very opulent. And we see Srila Prabhupada also followed this formula. He said to attract those, these programs must be very expert. He even said his disciples should wear very nice and clean and neat clothes. They should not look shabby. So like this, he used the facilities that were coming to him in the service of Krishna. They would have great processions through the streets with elephants and motor vehicles, very grand and elaborate. But he was doing so for the purpose of trying to attract those to the process of devotional service, whatever it took. And again, at the same time, he was very, very careful to ensure that his disciples would not become attached. And we know the very famous conversation he had with Prabhupada at Radhakund, that when the disciples began to fight over the rooms and facilities, he lamented that, I wish we could sell all the marble in the temple and just print books. Had I known that my disciples would become like this and attached to these facilities, I would have never built in the first place, he lamented. So we can, you know, appreciate the opportunity. Now, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was of such a purity state that he could indulge in such activities and have no risk of becoming attached.
We ourselves, we have to be very, very careful because the allurements are so strong, Maya is so powerful, that we may begin to rationalize our activities. Oh, this is for the purpose of preaching. But we should be very mindful and work under the instruction and guidance of our seniors to help protect us from such potential deviations. Bhaktisiddhanta, says Thakur, taught so many things. You know, one of my favorite pastimes is Bhaktisiddhanta, says Thakur, the pastime in the sense that it's a teaching of, you know, the context is very important to know what to do, what decision to take. So once he was giving a lecture at the Gaudiya Math in Mayapur, it's a very beautiful place still you can go today, and he was giving a lecture, and in the middle of the lecture, one snake came, and this cobra had come right up to the Vyasasana, and the disciples were ready to attack the snake and remove it. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur held them back, said, no problem. And this snake came, offered its dandavas, bowed its head, and then slithered away. And clearly there's some relationship between this jiva and this Paramahamsa. But on another occasion, Srila Prabhupada writes that he had gone to the same area, and he was standing in the courtyard, and a snake had come. A very poisonous snake had come. And he began to call out to his godbrothers for help. And the godbrothers had come, and they didn't know what to do. And Bhaktisiddhanta Satyakur came to the balcony, and he saw that Prabhupada standing there and the snake there. And he instructed his disciple to kill that snake. So we see, on the one hand, he forbade his disciples from killing that snake. On the other hand, in the next instance, he ordered his disciples to kill that snake. And Prabhupada writes about this in comments that it was very perplexing to him for some time. And it was not until later that he understood, you know, that Guru Tattva has the potency to know right from wrong in all circumstances. And so, you know, we have to understand how to apply the different principles. And so Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was not threatened by the first snake. But when he saw that his disciple, Srila Prabhupada, was at risk, he was willing to do anything to protect his disciple. And thus he ordered that. So we see like this many, many different experiences of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. So now we'll come, just to wrap up. I lost track of time, I apologize. But we'll come to the meeting of Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So this took place in 1922, as Prabhupada described. His friend Narendra had dragged him to the meeting. Prabhupada was not so interested in meeting another sadhu. He had met many sadhus in the home of his father, and he found most of them to be of bogus caliber. And so he was not so interested in meeting another such sadhu. But his friend dragged him to the top of the roof at one Ulti Dingi Junction Road. And there, Prabhupada offered his obeisances. And as soon as he got up from offering his obeisances, he was given this instruction that we are all extraordinarily grateful for. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur noted their English-speaking ability and said, you should take this message to the West. You are educated and know this. And of course, a little debate ensued that Prabhupada describes. He was defeated. And when he came down from that rooftop and onto the street, his friend asked him, what did you think? And Prabhupada said, now this is the real person who has come to spread Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's real message. And he describes that it was that time he accepted him in his heart as his guru. And it was 10 years later, in 1932, that Srila Prabhupada took initiation in Allahabad. Just prior to that initiation, Prabhupada was strongly desiring to be in the company of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was conducting a Vrajamandal Parikrama. And so he was able to
leave his business for one day, and he went to see Bhaktisiddhanta Sesh Thakur in the evening at the campsite. And there was an option to go see some nearby holy places or to hear a class from Bhaktisiddhanta Sesh Thakur. So many devotees went for the taking darshan of these holy sites. And a few very senior devotees stayed back to hear this class. And in addition, Srila Prabhupada decided that I would like to hear. And this class, Prabhupada explains, went on for hours. And slowly, people were, devotees were leaving. And at the end, it was Srila Prabhupada, who was at that point an uninitiated disciple, and a few very, very senior sannyasi disciples. And Srila Prabhupada was just fully in bliss, overwhelmed in ecstasy, absorbed in the mellows of the teachings of his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Sesh Thakur. So when Bhaktisiddhanta came to Allahabad after this parikrama, when Srila Prabhupada was presented by the temple president at that time to Bhaktisiddhanta as a candidate for initiation, Bhaktisiddhanta very sweetly replied, "Oh, I have noted him. He likes to hear. He is very attracted to hearing," and thus he agreed to give him initiation. Srila Prabhupada, he said, actually, he does not go away, referencing so many others went away, but Prabhupada did not go away. And that attracted the heart of Bhaktisiddhanta Sesh Thakur. And he gave him initiation. He not only gave him first initiation, but he gave him second initiation as well. He had established already at this point the first initiation and 1 year kind of Harinam initiation, waiting period for second. But noting the great position of Srila Prabhupada, he initiated him immediately, both first and second. And so, like this, the pastimes continue. Again, we'll just bring to the end of this before we discuss Purushottam Das Thakur for a few minutes. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sesh Thakur wrapped up his manifest Leela here towards the end of 1936. A few weeks before wrapping up his Leela, Srila Prabhupada had written a letter to Bhaktisiddhanta Sesh Thakur, lamenting that, you know, "I have not been able to render any service to you. You have so many wonderful disciples who are with you, always rendering service. But I have not been able to. I am, you know, working. I'm in grihastha life. I have my business. I'm supporting, you know, monetarily some." But he was lamenting like this. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sesh Thakur replied to that letter. This was just a couple weeks before he left this world. And he said that, "Your service to me will be to go and preach this message to the English-speaking world, to take Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings and spread it all over the world." And so this very important instruction that he had first received back in 1932, 15 years prior, he again received, and that message we know to be the life force of Srila Prabhupada. And so on January 1st, 1937, Bhaktisiddhanta Sesh Thakur returned back to the spiritual world, Golok Vrindavan. He asked his disciples to sing the bhajan of Shri Rupa Manjari Pada by Narottam Das Thakur as he was chanting and leaving this world. And so this is just a short description and discussion of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sesh Thakur. His impact and importance in our life cannot be overstated. We are living on the direct mercy of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sesh Thakur. So I'm very grateful to have this opportunity to discuss a little bit about him. Now, yesterday was also the disappearance day of another great devotee by the name of Purushottam Das Thakur. So I'd like to read the verses from Adi Leela, chapter 11, discussing this great person. This is verse 38 from chapter 11, Adi Leela. "The 23rd and 24th prominent devotees of Nityananda Prabhu were Sadashiv Kaviraj and his son Purushottama Das, who was the 10th Gopala. text 39. From birth, Purushottama Das was merged in the service to the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, and he always engaged in childish play with Lord Krishna. Now just read the purport. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur writes in his Anubhashya, Sarashiv Kaviraj and Nagara Purushottama, who are father and son, are described in Chaitanya Bhagavat as Mahabhagavan, greatly fortunate. They belong to the Vaidya caste of physicians. Text 156 of the Gauro Gonodesha Deepika says that Chandravali, a most beloved gopi of Krishna, later took birth as Sadashiv Kaviraj. In text 194 and 200, it is said that Kamasari Sen, the father of Sadashiv Kaviraj, was formerly the gopi named Ratnavali in Krishna's pastimes. All the family members of Sadashiv Kaviraj were great devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Purushottam Das Thakur sometimes lived at Shuka Sagara, near Chakada and Simaruli railway stations. All the deities installed by Purushottama Thakur were formerly situated in Beledanga Gram. When the temple was destroyed, the deities were brought to Shuka Sagara. When the temple merged in the bed of the Ganges, the deities were brought to Janava Mata's deity in Sahibadanga Bedigram. Since the place was destroyed, all the deities are now situated in a village named Chandudegram, which is situated 1 mile from Palapada, referred above. That is, again, from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Anubhashya commentary. I thought it was quite appropriate to read a commentary from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Purushottam Das Thakur is a great, great devotee in our Gorla Leela. He, Vrindavan Das Thakur comments that he is one of the chief associates of Lord Nityananda. Very, very dear associate. You can see he's coming in a line, a family of great devotees. It said there are four generations of great devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. Purushottam Das Thakur's father, Sadashiv Kaviraj, is none other than Chandravali. And his father is also another great devotee. And Purushottam Das Thakur is described as one of the 12 principal gopas, the 10th gopa. In some areas, it's discussed that he is Stoka Krishna. He was named, known by the gopa as Stoka Krishna. Also, Purushottam Das Thakur had a very wonderful son. His son, by the name of Kanu Thakur. And when his son was born, immediately his wife had passed away. And so Lord Nityananda and Janava Mata came with great love and compassion upon this occurrence. And you can say in some ways adopted this child and took them home with them. And this child, Purushottam Das, grew up with Lord Nityananda. And at the age of five, when Janava Mata went to Vrindavan, she took this young boy with her, and he grew up in the association of Janava Mata and all the Goswamis of Vrindavan, and became a great, great devotee. So Purushottam Das Thakur is a very notable personality in our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, and again, is a very dear servant of Lord Nityananda and performed very many nice pastimes. You can see he established many deities and was worshiping them very, very nicely. And so yesterday was the disappearance day of Srila Purushottam Das Thakur. Again, his pastimes are described in a little bit in Chaitanya Charitamrita, a little bit in Chaitanya Bhagavat, and these two great literatures. So with that, I'll just wrap up. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Shri Purushottam Das Thakur Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda. Hare Krishna devotees, please forgive me for any questions or discussion, comments. Anybody would like to share some glorification of either of these two great personalities, most welcome. It's very auspicious for us to share something, so any discussion we can have.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dhanyavad Pranam. It was such a beautiful session, Prabhu. It was so wonderful to hear all the pastimes of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati summarized so beautifully. Really, I love the class, and one thing that stuck to my mind is about how Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, when he went to Calcutta, his guru said, oh, you don't want to go to Calcutta, it's not a great place. But then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was so confident because he knew he had the lotus feet of his guru. It is so beautiful, such a lovely class. Thank you so much, Prabhu.
Thank you for your blessings.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dhanakshana, and glorious Krishna Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. It's a very, very nice class, Prabhu, and very devout, a great acharya. Prabhuji, I have a question about actually Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. So, we use everything in the Krishna service, Kavayagya. Sometimes, yes. Also mentioning it's very difficult. How we can let us dive the consciousness we develop, because sometimes I feel into whatever related because just like a deity, holy name, even Bhagavatam, it's we can directly relate to Krishna, we can sometimes feel that this is a Krishna. Sometimes we give so much of respect, but the other thing is indirectly related, even everything is Krishna's energy. It's very difficult to see. In Krishna's side. So, that is my one question. I have another question also, Prabhu. Maybe you can answer this one.
Mataji, can you maybe speak a little bit into the... I caught most of the question, but can you just summarize the question again, just so I make sure I heard it clearly? I was having a little bit of trouble hearing it.
Oh, okay, Prabhu. Prabhu, I was asking the question. Yukta Vairagya, you were telling us. And sometimes it's very difficult. The holy name, Krishna, deity, you can attach there, Krishna himself, but other things, whatever is there, to utilize in Krishna service, is like family, everything is very difficult. How we can see as related to things and in Krishna service?
Yeah, okay. I thank you, Mataji. Nice question. Yeah, the application of the Yukta Vairagya principle is not so easy or clear. And so that is why we need the guidance and instruction of Guru and our, you know, senior devotees to help make sure we don't, misapply this principle. You know, just we can start to rationalize, oh, I bought this new iPhone because I want to, you know, read, Prabhupada's books on my phone. Well, maybe that's true, and that would be, you know, an aspect of Yukta Vairagya, utilizing a material item for the service of Krishna. But then, you know, is there another means that, you know, would be appropriate for me? And so, is that going? Am I rationalizing, you know, the acquisition of various material items, and, you know, sort of using it under the disguise of my spiritual life, or vice versa? So. When it comes to the fundamental basis, everything in the material world is an energy of Krishna, right? It is his inferior energy. So it can be used in the service of Krishna. So, you know, everything around us, we can find ways to use in the service of Krishna. But the application requires some fine-tuning. Because otherwise we can, again, get down the path of misapplying the principle. So we should be, you know, seek out the guidance of our, you know, seniors who can guide us. You know, Prabhuji, Mataji, I'm thinking I'm using this in the service of Krishna, but is it really? Or is it just a kind of a facade for my, you know, sense gratification? And, you know, someone like Bhakti Siddhanta Sadhitakur can take it to extremes, right? He can ride in grand processions on an elephant and have marching bands and all these things, and saying, I'm utilizing this, you know, grand pomp and circumstance for the purpose of attracting people to Krishna. But if, you know, just speaking of myself, if I were sitting in such a thing, it would be extraordinarily disastrous, because, you know, the ego would grow so grand and we become attached to that love and adoration. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada was amazing at this. He could receive so much adoration and love, yet he was fully detached from it. So when we, you know, try to apply this Yukta Vairagya, we have to do it kind of appropriate to our progress and purity in bhakti, so that we don't take it to a position that becomes dangerous for us. And that really requires, how to do that requires, you know, more one-on-one instruction with, you know, someone who knows us very well, who can kind of guide us. But, you know, the broad principle is everything around us, you know, can and should be used in the service of Krishna. And that's what Prabhupada did. He used airplanes and dictaphones and apartments and the printing press and everything. He used everything in the service of Krishna. So, okay?
Yes, yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Prabhupada, also, you were telling the preaching. It was very inspiring, Maharaj, Bhakti Sanswati Maharaj, and before he started his movement, he was doing his austerity, yes, he was preparing, he was doing so much of austerity. What you suggest, Prabhu, in our case, because in before class also you were mentioning, anyway, different way we can use our intelligence to preaching different people, but these things, before preaching, we need to prepare ourselves also to some extent, because to give Krishna consciousness to others. So in that case, I can tell something to do.
Yeah. You know, of course we cannot imitate Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur and his austerity to prepare for preaching, but we can understand, as you have very nicely, that, you know, we must prepare ourselves and remain steadfast. And so preaching is a very difficult situation, because there are many entrapments that can bring one down, and it can become difficult. And so to prepare, you know, one must constantly prepare. And that constant preparation is great sadhana. You know, our sadhana should be very, very strong. And the stronger our sadhana is, the more effective our preaching will be. Because if we, you know, if we don't remain disciplined and strong in our sadhana, then how we'll have any ability to convey the message of our previous acharyas. So, you know, our preparation, it's ongoing. It's not as though we'll do for a few years and then we'll kind of let it slack. We don't have that type of ability or purity. So throughout our, you know, life, we should maintain very, very strong and strict sadhana. The stricter and stronger our sadhana, the more disciplined, like Bhaktisiddhanta's refusing to eat mangoes. If we refuse to hit the snooze button, if we refuse to, you know, sleep past our stated time and adhere to the to our sadhana, then we can be you know, sufficiently prepared to convey the message. And the second comment I would make is, you know, we have to understand what is our position in preaching. We have absolutely zero ability to speak on Krishna. How we, as an infinitesimal tiny spark, have any knowledge of the Supreme? We have none. Zero. Zilch. But by the mercy of Krishna and Guru, some information may come to us, if they choose it to come, and that we can then simply transpose. Our mood should be like that of a record player. When you put a very powerful, you know, Beethoven record of great quality into the record player, and the record player is broadcasting this very, you know, exquisitely crafted, you know, piece of music, the record player does not think, oh wow, I have created some nice music. Oh wow, I am making people really enthusiastic to hear this music. It is simply a machine that is basically a machine repeating what is on that piece of vinyl. Like that, that should be our mood in preaching. Because we have factually no ability to speak on Krishna, no ability to speak on these great acharyas. But for the purpose of propagating the message to Krishna's lost children, he may give us some ability to speak. And just as he gives, it can immediately go away as well. So we should have a full understanding of what our role is in preaching. If we think, you know, I'm speaking on Krishna, you know, oh, I am, you know, helping this person come to Krishna. No, we have no ability. All we can do is simply repeat. And whether somebody takes to it or not, that is between them and Krishna. We have no ability to influence someone's journey in Krishna consciousness. But what should inspire us to still preach, to still carry on, is that is the wish and desire of our acharyas, to go out and preach, to go out and speak. And so we must maintain a great humility and a factual understanding of what our position is in speaking on Krishna. And I guess the third thing I would say is that in preaching, the beneficiary of one's preaching is the preacher. We must view this as speaking to ourselves, and not just saying it. Like, you know, sometimes we'll say, "I am your servant." Internally, we're thinking, "This person's a rascal." No, but that should be our true inner consciousness. The core of our heart should feel that way. So if we have great sadhana, great humility, and this understanding of who is the beneficiary, then, you know, we may have some scope to follow in the footsteps of our great acharyas and carry on this mission. So that is what I can offer as our preparation for preaching.
Very beautiful, Prabhu, very beautiful. Dr. Prabhu, sometime what happens, even though actually we are completely unqualified, when we feel like that, we should not be discouraged, because for our purification, we can tell Krishna about him to others. Yeah, that is a very, very right understanding. Yeah,
I was going to make one comment then on the other side of that also is, I like how you said, you know, we may feel unqualified to speak. To say I'm unqualified to preach also means we don't understand this process. Because we'll never be qualified to speak. Nobody is qualified to speak and preach. All we are qualified to do is repeat. So in that realm, no one should feel I am not qualified. Prabhupada would send out devotees who joined on Monday, on Tuesday they would be on the street spreading and distributing books and preaching. So everyone must take to the process of preaching to whatever capacity we have. Not think, sometimes we think it's out of humility. I say, oh, I'm not qualified. Actually, that is not humility. Because humility is to know I'm never going to be qualified. But out of humble submission, I will follow the order of our Guru Parampara and spread this message. Okay? So we have to carry both with us. Yes, we are not qualified, and we never will be qualified. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Guru Parampara may give us some, you know, blessings to be able to just repeat. Thank you, Mataji, for a nice discussion.
Yes, yes. So that's why sometimes we may feel discouraged to tell about Krishna to others, but that's a very, very nice answer given by you, Prabhu. Thank you. Thank you so much, Shiva.
Thank you. Just read Shiva Prabhupada's books. Hare Krishna, Mataji. Yes?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Koti, koti, dandavat pranam. Such an excellent class. Today we learned so many things from you. Especially we are not qualified to serve Srila Prabhupada and Srila Gurudev. We are a puppet of Lord Krishna, Srimati Radharani, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Gurudev, which is Guru Parampara. Thank you very much, Prabhuji, for inspiring us, guide us, and clear so many doubts. Dandavat pranam, Hare Krishna, Hare Bol.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Mataji, for your blessings.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam, all glories to Srila Prabhupada and Gurudev. Beautiful lecture, Prabhuji. Completely you immersed us in the pastimes of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I had a question. During the time when he was printing the press and he was fixing and all that you mentioned, so was he the articles which he was publishing, were they the products of Bhakti Vinod Thakur, or was he was also doing some writing at that point of time?
Yeah, he was both. He was writing prolifically. He had his, I think it was a weekly or maybe it was a monthly magazine that was out. He had a couple of different, The Harmonist was one of them. So he was writing prolifically himself. He was writing books, he was writing commentaries, like the commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita, commentaries on Sri Upanishadamrita, and so many other books. And he was also printing our other Vaishnava Acharya books as well. So, and he wrote, if you read like the Brahma Samhita that we read, that is, the purports are from Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. You'll see his English was of extraordinary high caliber, very, very scholastic. He was both reproducing others' books and also writing his own books.
Thank you, Prabhuji. And one more question. The Yukta Vairagya concept that you mentioned, now was he the initiator of that? Was that the first time that the things of Krishna being used for the purpose of Krishna, that concept, was that brought to life by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, or somebody else, some other Acharya had done it before?
No. That this is a principle that is a foundation of bhakti. So Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu presents this verse, Anashaktya Vishayam Yataram Upajayante Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagya Uchyate. So in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami is presenting this real renunciation and false renunciation. And of course that instruction came from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. And so, no, this Yukta Vairagya principle is an eternal principle of bhakti. But Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur was a, you know, very recent and I would say very vivid implementation of this principle that we can see and learn from, as was Srila Prabhupada. Because again, you know, Bhakti Siddhanta was criticized for some of his activities because he was, you know, so-called, using material items that were at that time forbidden for sannyasis to use, like cut cloth or sewn cloth, you know, motor vehicles, things like that. So it's just he's a very vivid example, but he is not the originator of that. This is an eternal principle of bhakti.
Okay, Prabhuji. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Mataji.
Any other discussion or comments?
Thank you, Prabhuji, for the wonderful class and very nice instructive points. We look forward to your more classes, Prabhuji. And if there are any no more questions or comments for Prabhuji, I think we can end the call here. Okay. Let's pay our obeisances to Prabhuji and all the devotees. Vancha Kalpatarupyascha Krupa Sindhu Pevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namaha. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. His Grace Nitya Krishna Das Prabhuji ki jai. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Very nice class.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Dhanyavad Pranam. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much, Prabhuji. Dhanyavad Pranam. Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, thank you so much.